You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the mindsets of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm really excited and honored for today's guest. I've got to know him off and on over the last several years and just really love his story, what he's doing, and just the success that he's had as an entrepreneur. And I'm excited to bring Mike Wolf on today. He is a self-made freedom lifestyle entrepreneur, seasoned investor, and international speaker. He has been investing in real estate for over 25 years, and Mike has a passion for entrepreneurship and giving back, as well as traveling the world, because I know he's filming with me today from Vienna, right, Mike?
Yes, I'm in Vienna, and I'm glad. I'm so glad we have this technology where we can do this from anywhere.
I know, right? It's amazing, on the other side of the world, and get to hang out and talk with you today. So Mike is a regular contributor in the media with an extensive background in business, entrepreneurship, and real estate, and his experience investing in the U.S. as well as Canada has given him a unique perspective on taxation and other cross-border investing challenges. Mike not only loves investing in real estate, but he loves teaching his students about it as well, and has helped thousands of people successfully invest in turnkey properties and taught thousands how to do it themselves throughout his various courses that he offers. And Mike is so passionate about helping people how to successfully invest and grow thriving businesses, and a passion for entrepreneurship and sharing that wisdom with his students. As a heart-centered entrepreneur, his passion is giving back in the entrepreneurial community to help other people make informed decisions, educational business decisions, to building long-term passive income and wealth building for themselves and their families. And Mike helps people realize their dreams in creating both time and location financial freedom by teaching strategies to achieve passive income. He also believes that you should love what you do every day and really enjoy life. And I know Mike does that. He lives what he preaches and he teaches. So Mike, I want to welcome you to Making Bank today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Good to be here and good to see you, buddy.
I know, you too, man. It was we always see each other normally every few months, it seems like, but definitely really cool and awesome to connect with you on the other side of the world, like I mentioned, and excited to the really cool, awesome nuggets of wisdom that we can share with the audience today and hopefully help get them started on passive income path.
Love
in their life.
Love it. Can't wait.
Well, so I guess tell me a little bit about what got you started in your entrepreneurial journey.
The interesting thing is I actually started off trying to live my parents' life, because my parents wanted me to be a lawyer. And so I started off going to university, racking up a whole bunch of student loans. You know, I got my first degree, and as I mentioned, my parents wanted me to become a lawyer. And after the first degree, I had so many student loans that I decided, before I go back and get the second degree, I'm going to go try and pay these things off. And got a job at the phone company, because my friend's mother was a manager there, and it was a government job, so it paid really well. It was union, paid really well. And while I was there, I actually bought some real estate, not thinking that was going to be my career. Just bought some real estate because I was starting to make enough money to qualify for the mortgage. And a couple of years after I bought my first property, the market took off, and I realized I made more money on that piece of real estate that I bought than I did going to my job that I didn't really like. And so it was a really good mistake. And I looked back and I thought, hey, I made more money on this piece of real estate over the last 2 years than going to this job 40 hours a week.
Right.
That I wasn't really passionate about. I thought, if I could do this by mistake, what would happen if I did this on purpose? And it led me on this 27-year journey, which brings me to today, which had a lot of ups and downs, by the way. It wasn't all just like smooth sailing, but it led me on this path where I basically told my parents, I'm not going back to law school. And I just got this entrepreneurial spirit, and in addition to the real estate, I've invested a lot of different businesses along the way, and decided, one, I learned I didn't want the corporate world, even though the phone company led me to qualify for property. So I'm grateful for that, but I didn't fit into the corporate world. I really didn't fit in. If I was a lawyer right now, I'd probably be miserable. So no offense to any lawyers watching, but that's just not me.
Right.
But that's kind of But I got in totally by mistake, and I wish I made mistakes like that every day. So it was a really good one.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And so you know, you said there's a lot of ups and downs, and especially, I mean, you know, when you're going into the real estate market and you had that one part that really took off, but what did you, you know, how'd you teach yourself this, and, you know, and how'd you navigate through all a lot of those landmines and challenges?
Well, here's the thing is that when I bought that first property, you know, my reasoning was it was kind of a long-term approach. It's like, if I buy this property, you know, 25 years from now, the mortgage will be paid off and it'll be clear title and it'll be part of my, you know, retirement. And I had a really good long-term approach and I didn't really know what I was doing. But the good thing about real estate that I'll say is it's very forgiving, meaning if you have a long enough, you know, there's a saying, don't wait to buy real estate and wait. Meaning that if you can buy real estate and afford to hold on to it, eventually it's going to pay off. And I got really fortunate because the market took off not long after I bought it, meaning a couple of years. And so that was a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I was sitting on a lot more money than I ever thought I'd have, and I managed to pay off all my student loans a lot quicker than I thought. But when you do things by mistake as opposed to strategically, one of the challenges you get is now, I say I went from being a very humble person to being a know-it-all. And, you know, so then you try to duplicate it. And of course, I made my money because I got lucky because the market took off. But you start to take credit for it in your mind and think, well, it's because I'm an expert at this. And real estate comes natural to me. So obviously, I'm going to be able to do it again. And not only that, greed starts to kick in. So here I am. I quit my job at the phone company. I also tell my parents I'm not going back to law school. So I burnt all my bridges because I was sitting on this, what seemed like a lot of money at the time.
Right.
But what I didn't know is that, you know, trying to duplicate it, and I also wanted to duplicate it faster. I said to myself, I don't want to wait 2 years. I'm going to start flipping properties. I'm going to make this money every, you know, 3 months to 6 months.
Sure.
And so I didn't really know how, but I thought I did. And so I went from being a know-it-all and having, you know, amassed a fair chunk of cash on that first deal to managing to lose it over the next couple of deals. And that was very humbling for me because I'd already quit the job.
Right.
And told myself I'm not going back to school. And so I had no choice but to try and figure it out. And so I went from being a know-it-all to what I tell people now is a learn-it-all. And that's why we keep running into each other, because I still to this day, I love to do a lot of go to a lot of seminars and do personal development, work on myself. I'm always studying marketing and how can I do things better. And I never, ever stop learning. I'm a lifelong learner now.
Sure.
And so I went from thinking I knew everything to actually having to go find other people and see how they did, what they were doing. And it made me a very humble and better person, I think, having some of those losses, and made me much smarter and more strategic. But the interesting thing is when I went from this long-term approach to this get-rich-quick approach, I lost everything. And when I went back to having more of a long-term approach again and thinking strategically, I started to get better results. And so that's some of the stuff that I teach people, is that you have to have the right foundation, the right knowledge, the right people on your teams, the right mentors. And when you have all those things in place, you're going to get the result. When you think you know everything, and your ego gets the best of you, and the emotion jumps in, you're in trouble. And I learned that the hard way a few times over the years. So,
so tell me too, what, so right now you guys, I think last time we were talking, you usually have about 600 properties on average, or?
I don't have that many. I've done, you know, these days we help other, okay. One of the things I do, my company helps other investors around the world
by
real estate, mostly in the U.S., and so we sell properties to people in Australia, South Africa, Canada, I mean, all over the planet are buying our turnkey properties. And,
sure.
And turnkey properties are ones where we've already fixed them. They're in the right city, the right neighborhood. We have the right tenants with the right team in place. And we do everything for our clients so that they can invest safely from wherever on the planet they live. My teams and I, we've done thousands of transactions over the years. I don't own personally 600 properties, but I've got a couple of hundred properties.
Okay.
And I live off the passive income. So that's
sure.
One of the things that I teach people, is that it's not just about making bank, as you say. Making
right.
bank, having money is great, but it's about how do we create something that is sustainable, and how do we create something that, if the market were to go down, still gives you money every single month, and it's effortless.
Sure.
And it also comes in not by your efforts, not by you having to go do the work. It's you do something once and get paid for it over and over and over again. And so that's what we call passive income, truly passive income, where you're not having to go collect rent. You're not having to go, you're not getting phone calls at 2 a.m. to go fix toilets.
Yeah.
The money comes in effortlessly. And so that's what we help other people to do. That's one of the sides of my business.
Awesome. And so, so it sounds like then you guys will actually go in, acquire the properties, fix them up, get them ready and rent them. And then kind of manage of them after. And then, so let's say myself as an investor for in what, you know, what you guys are doing, you guys make that money kind of probably then what you're selling off to the investor myself under. Is that kind of how it works?
Right. So typically we're buying properties in bulk from the banks. You know, we're buying 20, 30, 40 at a time.
Sure.
When you buy those packages, at least half the homes are crap, which I would never, if I don't want them in my portfolio, I'm not going to sell them to another investor. So
right.
What we do is there's different hedge funds. There's other funds that will buy our leftovers that we don't want. So we get those out of the package right away. So we'll only fix the ones that make sense.
Sure.
We're only buying mostly newer homes because they give much better results than old homes in the right, and it's all about having the right neighborhoods. If you're in the right neighborhoods, you're going to attract the right tenants.
Sure.
And then you have to have a great team, because if you don't have the right people representing you and collecting that rent, it's only as good as the team that you've got. And
right.
So that's the stuff that we do for our clients. And then they get title to properties, and I basically help them get into the market. And then one of the things that I've done over the years is I'm very strategic. I get into a market when it makes sense. We ride up that market. And at the same time, while we're holding it, these properties produce cash flow, so you get paid every single month, which makes it sustainable. And then when the time is right, we'll sell those properties and go to the next market. And I tell my clients, hey, now's a really good time to sell. And you know what? Before we got into Atlanta, which is my favorite market now, we were in Phoenix.
Okay.
And most of my clients that moved their money from Phoenix to Atlanta, when they sold their Phoenix properties, they're able to buy two for every one they sold in Phoenix.
Oh, wow.
So now you've doubled your portfolio just like that.
Sure.
And so that's the stuff that I do for my clients.
That's awesome.
And, you know, basically tell them when to get in, when to get out, and help them build a portfolio. So I'm not really into helping people do a transaction. I'm here to help them build a portfolio.
Portfolio, okay.
So create that lifestyle freedom for themselves where they have a bunch of properties. And it takes time. I never preach this as, you know, get rich quick.
Right.
But it's all planting seeds in the right markets. And everything I've got today, 27 years later, is a direct result of that very first one that I bought. Had I not bought that one, I wouldn't have what I've got today.
Sure.
So it's about being patient and buying strategically and not just making money because you got lucky because the market went up. There's
yeah.
a lot of thought that goes into the markets that we pick.
Right.
So, and the homes within those markets and the neighborhoods.
Cool. And so then as an investor, then, you know, with say I'm invested in the properties with you and everything else. And then when you say, hey, it's time to sell, do you guys help sell the properties? Or is that like, hey, me and the investor, I got to go out and put up a for sale sign and try to hire somebody and do all that?
Yeah, no, yeah, we take care of all that. I've got people on my team that do everything from start to finish. And
wow.
then when you're ready to get to that next market, I've already got the team set up because
that's awesome.
I'm invested in that market myself. So I build up these teams to make it very scalable.
Right.
So it can handle the demand for all our investors. And we make it so it's basically one-stop shopping. You don't need anybody else on the team. We have, you know, everybody from your accountants. And even if you're investing from a different country, we have cross-border specialists that help foreign investors navigate the U.S. Market, because obviously you're going to have some tax things to deal with. I mean, the IRS obviously wants a piece of it. And so we help you minimize your taxes, you know, legally, and how to deal as a foreign investor so that you're not getting double taxation. And we have people from start to finish for everything from that to selling the properties to, you know, acquiring the properties, you name it. We take care of everything.
Awesome. And so as an investor, what's the average return kind of after you net everything all out that do you usually see, I guess, per property, or how do you usually look at it, or what's the best
way
to look at it?
Well, it varies a little bit, but, you know, we measure. There's a couple of different ways we measure how you monetize something. And so right now, if somebody were to buy a place for cash in Atlanta, you're going to net around 8% per year. So if you spent $100,000, our homes start around $100,000, let's say.
Okay.
So you're going to net around 8% after all the expenses, after you pay the property manager, after you pay property taxes, after you pay insurance, all that stuff. You should net around 8%. if you're able to get financing, we have in-house financing. Obviously, the better your credit is, the cheaper that financing will be. That might push it into the double digits. We have actually an exit strategy where we try to get the tenants to purchase the property from you. And we have a program where we do what's called a lease option, where we help the tenants. Most of our tenants are people that want that. Before the recession, used to own their own home. And they lost it during the recession, and they want to get back into home ownership. And so we work with them to help them achieve that. And if these people exercise their option, they've got 3 years, our investors are netting around 20% per year, which is pretty hard to duplicate in any other, you know, you're not going to get that in the stock market. You're certainly not going to get it leaving in your savings account. And so that's what we try to do, is we try to net 20%. In some markets, we've actually exceeded that. Because sometimes we're buying in markets where I believe they're way undervalued. It's kind of like a rubber band. When a market's too far undervalued, you stretch that rubber band. When it bounces back very quick. And same with if you buy too high. When things are way too high, as we saw during the recession, they come tumbling down very, very quick also. So it's a matter of knowing when to get in, when to get out. And that's something over 27 years I figured out, because back in the old days, I just happened to get lucky that I got in and got out at the right time, but I couldn't duplicate it. So now I've learned, how do we do this time after time after time? How do we invest safely so that if it takes longer to go up, our investments are still sustainable? And how do we make money even if the market goes down? How do you make it so that that money still keeps coming in? And that stuff, you know, when you're able to make money in a down market, that's really a sign of a sophisticated investor. Most people don't know how to do it. But I've learned how to do that.
That's awesome. And so say like I was going to just go do this myself. What are maybe some strategies or key success points that would set me up for success to do this?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing, the most important thing is, one, a lot of people think that they have to invest close to home. And kind of like any business, whether it be, and I've done a lot of stuff besides real estate businesses, with any business, if you had a choice, you know, I get people that say, oh, well, it's so much more convenient to invest in my own city. Right. Well, if you invest in your own city, the only advantage to that is if you're trying to create a job for yourself, meaning that you're planning on going collecting rent.
Sure.
You're planning on dealing with, you know, fixing the homes. And that makes your business automatically not scalable, because there's only one of you. And once you get past a certain number of properties, your whole life is going to be surrounded around collecting rent at the end of the month and dealing with bad tenants. And so the main thing is, one, don't invest in your own backyard. Just be just convenient with any business, any entrepreneurial venture. Never do things out of convenience. Do things out of business sense. That's number one.
Right.
So if you're not investing, so imagine you lived in Antarctica and McDonald's approached you and said, hey, well, we have two potential McDonald's. They're both the same price. You can have one in Antarctica next door to your igloo, or you can have one in the middle of Times Square in New York. Which one are you going to pick? If you have business sense, you pick the one in Times Square.
Right.
If you have emotional attachment to location, you're going to pick the one next door to you, and you're probably going to fail. So it's all about picking pick the right market where it makes the most sense from a business standpoint. But then, assuming you're not going to do it yourself, which you should not, because we're not getting into entrepreneurship to be a slave to our business. We want the business to support us. Then you have to have the right team. So the next step would be to build a really good team. If you're just buying one or two properties, to go build your own team that's going to be solid and good is probably going to be really, really difficult. So that's where we come in. And that's one of the big advantages, is that we've already done all the heavy lifting for you. We've already built the team. I actually stand behind, you know, we put a 1-year guarantee on the property, because we fixed it up to a higher standard than when it was brand new. So there's a lot of moving parts to trying to do this yourself. And that's one of the things I learned over the years, is that there was a time in my career where I was working literally 15-hour days, working on real estate all day long. And for a while, it was my passion. I actually loved it. And then one day I woke up, and all of a sudden it just seemed like everything was starting to go wrong. It just got too big. And all of a sudden there's one day where it was just like, seemed like every single thing, every property, there was, you know, a tenant who owed me money, or this needed to be fixed. And it just, the passion just suddenly disappeared one day, where it's like, hey, I can't do this anymore. And I was so focused on the business and being a workaholic, I didn't have time to spend with my daughter. And I wasn't paying attention to my health. I was just spiraling out of control, and it became all encompassing. It took up, you know, every minute of my day. And then I got smarter and I started to put teams in place and systems in place. I started to pull myself more and more out of the business. And as you know, nowadays I spend most of my time, you know, the things that are important to me are I love traveling.
Yeah.
I love volunteering all the time. That's what meet me is usually volunteering for different people. And also spending time with my grandson. I made a commitment that I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to create as many memories as possible with my grandson. And,
that's
and I,
awesome.
I kind of feel I got some time with my daughter, but there were lots of days where I would leave the home before the sun came up, and I'd come home after the sun went down, and I'd go the whole day without seeing my daughter. And I made a commitment that's not going to happen with my grandson. And so I changed my business, and instead of the business, me having to support the business, it's there to support me. And my money now makes me more money. And so it's not about creating a job for myself. So that's one of the things I really encourage is don't turn, whether it be real estate or whatever your entrepreneurial venture is, don't let it take up all your life.
Sure.
Start to delegate and get other people in place.
That's awesome. And so I know just, I mean, for me, you know, and I've been through that experience is the whole thing is, I, you know, we were trying to sell one property and I was like, well, let's just rent it out. And just dealing with the headaches. I mean, you know, you think you get somebody in there good, and then all of a sudden they stop paying you, and then it's time consuming. And then you got to try to be able to get them out, and it's and it, so I've been through it, so I totally know. And that's not somewhere I definitely I like the turnkey solution.
Yeah, well, it's a challenge. And even one property, even if it's right next door to you, don't.
It was, yeah, just, pretty much.
Yeah, just to me, you know, I recommend. I think every single person should own real estate. I think it's everybody has to own it, but not everybody has to be a full-time real estate investor to do it.
Sure.
And I think people should focus on what they're passionate about. And for a small percentage of the population, yes, that could be your passion. And I'm passionate. I'm, you know, I love real estate. I love what it's done for me.
Right.
I've got the passion back now that I'm not spending, you know, 24/7 dealing with it. So everybody should own it, but not everybody should become an expert and go and, you know, pound the pavement trying to find deals and, you know, doing all, turning into your job. Do the stuff that you love. And, you know, one of the things that I love to teach my students now is that, you know, don't focus on the money. Focus on what makes you happy and what lights you up and what's fulfilling to you. And, you know, do that stuff every day. But I'm not saying don't focus on money. Make sure you can support your lifestyle and you know, put systems in place and build something that feeds you while you're doing these things. But that's why I love volunteering, because it makes me happy. So my currency went from money to, I measure things in terms of happiness. What makes me happy? And giving back makes me really happy. And spending time with my grandson makes me happy. Chasing all those material things like I used to when I was younger, that doesn't light me up at all anymore.
Right.
I learned that the hard way. So
definitely. And I know one thing from what we talked about previously, you focus mostly on like single family type homes instead of like a multi-type unit properties and things.
I do, and I've done both. I mean, I've had apartments in the past,
right.
And there's nothing wrong with apartments. You can do quite well with them, but everybody I know who does apartments, that's become their job, their career. So I don't recommend that for most people, unless you're starting off with a pretty large sum of cash. I love having single family homes. Warren Buffett, as a matter of fact, he went on CNBC not too many years ago and said if he had the manpower, he would buy several hundred thousand single family homes. And there's good reason for that. That's where that got hit the hardest, you know, in the recession in the United States. And that some of the markets have come back. But if you look at some of the markets that haven't come back yet, that's where the big profits are going to be. The other thing is when you own if you had a 100-unit apartment building, let's say you have to go and put on a wedding for your daughter or something. Well, now you have to sell the entire thing to get money. If you have 100 single family homes, you can sell one and keep the other 99 and have them still working for you. And so I think the big thing is that's where the big appreciation is going to be in the next number of years. That's where the biggest money is. And two, it's the easiest to delegate. It's easiest to get other people to do all the work for you. And when things go wrong, you know, if you have 100 properties and you need a new roof on one, you're going to be fine. If your 100-unit apartment building needs a roof, you better have a lot of money in reserve. So it's a much different animal where you kind of got all your eggs in one basket, and you know, there are ways absolutely to do well with it, but unless you're a professional at doing them, I wouldn't start with that.
Start
put it that way.
Right.
Not exactly.
Okay. And then what was, along your journey here, what was probably one of the biggest challenges that you ran into? I know you kind of lost the passion you were talking about a little bit earlier and everything, but what was kind of one of those largest challenges that you didn't know if you're going to be able to continue with this, whether it was financially, emotionally, mentally, whatever it may be, and then how'd you kind of overcome all that?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think the biggest, you know, challenge for me, like I said, is that like most entrepreneurs, I think most entrepreneurs are very, they're visionaries, and we get these little downloads into our brain, and it's all of a sudden we're off and running, and you know, it's our baby. And one of the challenges is we tend to be control freaks, and we have a very hard time, you know, if this is your baby, you can't just hand off your baby to anybody. And so one of the challenges is I just felt like I needed to do everything myself, because I thought, well, if I hire somebody, they can't possibly do it as well as I can. You know, I think there's three phases of being an entrepreneur. The first phase is the solopreneur, where you do absolutely everything in your business and we don't delegate a single thing. The second phase is where you get to the point where I did, where all of a sudden you just can't handle it anymore. You know that you can't grow anymore unless you you start to get other people in the business. So for me, I went from investing only in my own backyard, which was up in Canada at the time. And then I started to find some opportunities in Las Vegas. That was my second market. And I couldn't collect rent in two cities at the same time. So I was forced to hire somebody to manage my properties in Vegas. And the main reason I wanted to manage my properties is you pay a property manager typically 10%. And I thought, well, am I going to pay 10%? I can just do this myself. So what I started to realize is my property manager in Las Vegas, he was collecting a lot more rent at the end of the month than I was, because I'm a very, you know, heart-centered type of entrepreneur. So if a tenant says, hey, Mike, we don't get paid till Friday, can you hold off? No problem, whatever, we'll wait till Friday. Well, they're testing the water. So the first month, they might be a few days late. Then the next month, they're going to be a few weeks late. Before you know it, they're a month or two behind. And then you have to evict them. And by the time you actually get your rent, it's 5 or 6 months later. And so anyway, the second phase is where you reluctantly hire somebody because you have to. But you micromanage them to death. So my property manager in Las Vegas, I told him every time, okay, I need to know everything that's going on in my properties. And so he'd be calling me saying, hey, Mike, the fridge is broken at 123 Main Street. What should I do? He knew what to do, but I forced him to call me. And so I was micromanaging him to death. And not once did I ever say, oh, they don't need a fridge. It was always the same answer. You know, see if they, you know, see what it costs to replace it. If it's more than a certain amount, then just put a new one in there. So I started to realize that, hey, you know what, I'm giving him this, you know, he's calling me for these things. He knows exactly what he needs to do, yet I'm trying to tell him how to do his job.
Yeah.
And so sort of the third phase where you realize, you know what, if I have the right people in place and they're experts in what they do, there's no point in me trying to teach somebody how to do something they're better at than I really am.
Right.
And so you go from micromanaging and babysitting, then you get to that third phase where you actually get your freedom back. And so I think most entrepreneurs go through these stages before they get successful. We all go through them. And I think the sooner that now, whenever I run a business right off the bat, you know, and like I said, I've done stuff, you know, well outside the real estate realm, where I've owned a lot of different businesses, but right away, before I even get involved, I'm already thinking right from the beginning, how can I delegate this? How can I get other people who are experts in this business to run it so that I'm making my money work for me, but I'm not adding my time. I'm not trading my time for the dollars. I'm getting other people to do it. And if I can't immediately pull myself out of the business very early on, then I'm not interested, because I don't measure it. Once again, I don't measure it by the money. I measure it by, is this going to make me happier? Am I going to, you know, is this going to enhance my life, or is it going to add stress to my life? Is it going to make me happier, or is it going to make me more miserable? And if it's going to make me money, but it's going to add stress, I don't need that. And so I think the biggest challenge was, you know, learning that one, doing the work yourself means that you're going to think really small. If you're going to micromanage, you're still thinking, because you're still trading your time for money, except that instead of doing the job, now you're a hot, you know, babysitter. And not only that, the people on your team aren't going to be happy because you're telling them how to do something they know how to do better than you. So it's just getting to the mindset where it's like, hey, there's people way smarter than me. 99% of people are better at almost everything. I suck at almost everything. I'm good at a few things, but in almost everything else, there's people way, way, way better than me at these things. And the sooner you realize that there's other people that can help you,
right,
and you let them do their genius, and you know, you step aside and do the things that you're good at and be the visionary in the business, but let other people do the things that they're good at, that will really let you get to the next level. And so that would I say is my biggest takeaway over these last 27 years. And then the other one is also, you know, getting out of your own way. And
yeah,
a lot of times entrepreneurs, we have these ideas, but we don't know how. We get so stuck in the how. And then we start all these negative things coming to our mind. Oh, I can't do this because, I can't do this because, I can't do this because. All those hows, I mean, there's people that know how to get people to the moon. So right. All these things that you don't know how to do, somebody else knows how to do. So step out of your own way and find the right people to get you from A to B and dream really, really big and then get other people to figure out the hows for you.
Nice. That's awesome. And I think as entrepreneurs, we all go through that. It's just, you know, how do I give up that control or, you know, but that's what you have to do to move to the next level and to really, you know, put yourself in a better position for sure.
Absolutely. So true.
Awesome. Well, we only got a few minutes left. So somebody's like, Mike, I really love what you're talking about. You know, I want to be, you know, find out what I can do to be a student with you and stuff. You know, where can they go find out more about you, Mike?
Yeah, their best bet is to just send me an email, mike@mikewolfmastery.com. It's Wolf, with, just like the animal, mike@mikewolfmastery.com. And I'm happy to give people a free strategy session where we can, if they need help with real estate investing, I'm happy to help them with that. If they need help with anything entrepreneurial, like I said, I've had a number of very diverse businesses. And the thing that all these businesses had in common is when I got into them, they were all failing. I don't do startups. Other than real estate, I've never done a startup. I bought people's failing businesses, brought in teams that people successful in those industries to take it, you know, make them successful. And I just put my money to work for me. So I'm really good at fixing broken businesses. So if anybody's stuck somewhere, I'm happy to give them some help and inspiration. And, you know, I love helping people and I love the entrepreneurial spirit. I love working with entrepreneurs. So they can email me and I'd be happy to get on a call with them for free.
Cool, man. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I know you're just so giving and sharing of information. It's really always cool. We get together and talk and just sit there and hang out. So
I love it.
Any last words you want to share with our audience before we have to go?
Yeah, I think the big thing is no matter what you're doing, dream really big. And like I said, don't worry about the how. You don't have to know how you're going to get there. Just think really big. Imagine that you had no limits. And we really do, because there's other people, like I said, that know all those things that you don't know how to do that you're stuck on. So don't let a website be holding you back. Don't try to figure out this stuff yourself. Just figure out what you want to do. Be the visionary. But just think really, really big. And then find the right people to help you get there.
Awesome. Oh, Mike, it was an honor to have you on Making Bank, be able to spend some time with you, share some information. I know it's packed full of awesome content today. So thank you again for coming on Making Bank.
Thank you for having me. It's great, as always, to see you, buddy. And I'm sure we'll be bumping into each other very soon.
Definitely, for sure. I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, SuccessThinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.